Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Reuters reported today that you remember those Clorox wipes, the disinfectants that were gonna save us. It's gonna take out coronavirus. We're gonna be able to wipe things down. It was gonna keep our hands clean. It was really a great announcement. I was going, hey, this is good for them. It's an American company. In fact, I know where I grew up in Cleveland. There's a Clorox plant right there. I actually know people who work for Clorox. Good. This is great. Turns out maybe we won't have the wipes that we need until 2021. And you go, but wait a second, we need them now. Isn't this why you have capacity to ramp up manufacturing? Isn't this what the capitalists tell us? That when the demand is there, they ramp up production and so they can feed the demand. This is the capitalist model. And yet it seems we're more reliant than ever on Chinese goods. And the last I checked, I think, what is it? The FDA has put out a list of about 100 hand sanitizers to stay the hell away from because they could be toxic. Not good times. Here to share some thoughts on where we are, why we are, and how we are with regards to our manufacturing and the fact that we're so dependent on China. I've asked Emily Delabrouillard to come talk with us. She is our China expert. She's also the co-founder of Horizon Advisory. HorizonAdvisory.org is their website. Emily, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's great to be on.
So, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm looking at this story about, we're not getting the PPE we need. We're not getting the stuff manufactured fast enough. We're not able to protect ourselves. And I'm going, this goes right back to things we've been talking about. The fact that we've outsourced our production, we've outsourced all of our critical needs, and now we're dependent.
Yeah. And I mean, this is what we've been saying for the past few months. For decades, China has been making us dependent on its manufacturing. With COVID and with the story of medical supplies, that became so obvious. But instead of actually taking this as an opportunity to shore up our capabilities and to do something about it, we're just getting more and more dependent on China. So now it comes out that we don't only need China for masks or for pharmaceuticals, we also need it for Clorox. And that's still happening. And China is doing everything it can to use this opportunity as a chance to make further inroads into our system.
Yeah, and this is one of those moments where, I've talked about Dan Coats, the former senator from Indiana and former Trump National Intelligence Director, his recent op-ed on why we can't have a cold war with China. And, moreover, it was more like we need to play nice until we can figure out how maybe we have a coherent strategy to take them on. And on that hand, I agree with him. But this idea that there's nothing we can do is kind of frightening to me.
Absolutely. And that you're going to let an adversary continue to take advantage of you and continue to siphon your resources until you get your act together. And the thing is, it's not just that we don't do anything about it. It's that we help fuel China's strategy. We just came out with a report over the weekend about how hundreds of millions of dollars of Paycheck Protection Program loans went to Chinese companies. And that's money that was supposed to help U.S. small businesses and that was supposed to provide necessary capital for relief for our economy. And it went to Chinese state-owned enterprises, Chinese military companies, Chinese propaganda outlets.
I'm literally dumbfounded. when I saw that, it's how the fastest way for you to destroy yourself. Is this way. I mean, I know people who are trying to get those PPP loans, who are trying to save their small business. I know people who are struggling to make ends meet. I know people who are struggling to get through the unemployment system because the phone lines are never not jammed. And yet we find out that the Chinese, because they've got unlimited resources and they've got incredible technology, that they've cashed in already. I'm literally dumbfounded.
Yeah. And it's not just that they're PRC companies, it's that these are state-owned enterprises and military companies. And they're also companies, in some cases, that have an explicit tasking to be in the U.S. to obtain American technology. So our PPP loans are going to Chinese state-owned companies that are in the U.S. so that they can steal our technology.
That's kind of like, and to use like a high school analogy, it's kind of like, drawing your own kick me sign, putting the tape on the kick me sign and then breaking your arm to put it on your own back while simultaneously kicking yourself.
But you also paid the medical bill for that broken arm of yours. Yeah.
No, I would say you just didn't get it fixed. I mean, because this is where we are. I mean, it's, you know, when I see these stories, and I see tons of them all the time of how dependent we are and how desperate we're becoming, especially in this moment. And then you look at, you know, the fact that a lot of the stuff that we were told, you know, get these hand sanitizers because you got to sanitize your hands. My wife is crazy about this. You know, every time I get out of the car, put hand sanitizers on. And now we're finding out that a lot of it no good for you. Because you've got these foreign companies that are, hey, let's just as quick as throw as much crap into the U.S. market as possible. And, you know, maybe they catch us, maybe they don't. And that's somebody else's problem.
Yeah. And like when you look at this in terms of the generic drug story, the fact that a massive percentage of our generic drugs are being produced in China and their quality is just going down and down and down and down. So we can't trust the medicine we're taking at a time when there are medical issues beyond anything we've ever seen before.
Yep.
And we're okay with that?
Oh, I'm not okay with this at all. But here's the thing, and this is, if you go back to the Coates article, he was talking about, and this has always been the frame, Emily, we can't possibly take on China's manufacturing prowess because we need the cheap products. We need the cheap goods. You know, we can't go to Walmart and fill up our basket with, you know, cheap plastic crap for $50 and be satisfied with that. We absolutely have to have the cheap goods or we'll just collapse.
When really the reason that we're collapsing is because we don't invest in the physical economy and in the actual ability to produce real things.
You know, I got into this back and forth just the other day, actually. Because Nike, I don't know if you saw the Nike ad, I think it's like Together or something, but it's really an incredible ad. And I put it out and I gave them credit for that. I said, no, this is a really incredible ad. I mean, it's masterfully done. The editing was incredible. I said, you know, I don't like Nike. I've never purchased a Nike product. I will never purchase a Nike product. But this is an incredible ad. And immediately I got pushback because, well, you know, Nike's a good company because they blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, yeah, but they've never made a shoe in the U.S., and they use basically slave labor around the world to make massive profit off of their shoes. I have a problem with that. And I have a problem with any company that does that, which is why, again, I'm a labor guy who thinks we should be buying American-made products, union-made products, and at the least, you know, sustainable products with good labor practices globally.
Well, and we're saying we need these cheap goods. We need to be able to go to Walmart. And no one's saying, why are these goods so cheap? That's because they're made by forced labor in Xinjiang. And, oh, like, we have these norms as a country. And I'm pretty sure, like, those norms are against forced labor and genocide of an ethnic minority at the hands of an authoritarian state. But we're willing to turn a blind eye to that because we want our shoes or our Walmart basket as cheap as they can be.
Well, what do you say to the person who goes, you know, well, you know, if we didn't buy stuff from them, they would be worse off? Because I love this conservative argument that if we weren't exploiting them, somebody else would be, and it would be much worse.
As China, over the past 30 years, the authoritarian regime in China has not opened, has not gotten more democratic, and in fact has gone in the opposite direction. And it's not only gotten more repressive and moved towards a much more dangerous and terrifying form of authoritarianism, but it's also started to export that authoritarianism internationally. So our buying from Beijing is what allows it to do this and what fuels its ambitions to turn the world into its dictatorship.
Yeah, I mean, we've basically, and this is, you know, one of those things where, you know, people go, oh, you know, Emily, we've lost all these jobs. I go, we didn't lose them. We know exactly where they are. We allowed American companies to move them overseas for quick profit. And they've used that model against us. So the question that I keep coming back to is, you know, and we've had this conversation, is it too late to pull back on this? You know, how do you compete in a marketplace like ours that is open, that does allow lots of foreign investment, because it's not just China that's heavily invested in the U.S. There are a lot of foreign companies that are probably getting PPP money as well. You know, how do you pull back from this? And how do you do it in a way that you're not going to start the next Cold War? Because I keep getting this, you know, Rick, you, trading partners don't go to war. Because, you know, the big argument now is if we stop trading with them, if we stop giving in, we're eventually going to start dropping bombs on each other because, well, everything seems to be pointing that way. And for me, the one of the most recent things that points to that is Japan. Japan, you know, there's been a story, I'm sure you've seen it, that they're looking at first strike capabilities that they haven't had since, well, World War II. And to me, that's sending the message that they really don't think that we're going to be effective in the coming century.
Yeah. And the thing is, China doesn't see it as we're trading partners now and one day we might go to war. What China sees it as is that we are in a war. And they're just using trade and asymmetric trade and cheating in the trade system as their means of war. And if we realize that we're losing, maybe one day we'll turn to military war, but by that point it will be too late and they'll have won and that will be our desperate last attempt.
Yeah, so, they're going to buy all the stuff that we need to make our war machine. And this is where, exactly. You know, it's been probably 10 years since my friend Scott Paul over at the Alliance for American Manufacturing came out with this enormous book, and I've still got it somewhere. It's a giant book. Of all of the things that our military is dependent on for the Chinese. And this, again, goes back a decade. I can't imagine how much worse it is today.
Yeah, because it's not, I mean, it's everything in terms of manufacturing, in terms of technology, in terms of critical inputs like rare earths. But then you also get to the other side of the equation, and it's the information systems too. And like, does our command and our control work? I think that there's a lot there that hasn't been explored about the degree to which it's penetrated by China. And that's really scary because that's also our enduring advantage, is that we are the military superpower. And that's something that strategically we should be able to use to make China go on the defensive. If we signal to them that we're serious about competition, that might divert their resources in a direction that keeps them from using them to just take advantage of us economically.
So let me ask you this then, because, you know, Coates has said we definitely don't want the Cold War with China. Are you saying maybe that's the only way we're going to be able to stop this, is to make China think that maybe there is a military option here and that they go the Russian route? Because Coates' argument was we can't win this Cold War like the last one, because it's completely different, because the Russians weren't invested in our country. They didn't have all of our supply chains perverted. Is that where your thought process is?
So here's what's absolutely true. This is not the Cold War environment, and we're in a totally different world. So we will have to go about this competition differently. That said, there are certain assumptions and strategic models that worked for us in the Cold War. And if we can strip away the parts of them that, you know, are tactical manifestations designed for a different era, then those are still really useful. So looking at your adversary and saying, here are my adversary's strengths and weaknesses. Let me exploit the weaknesses and shore up mine. And not deal with the things that are their overpowering strengths, that's still just how you go about competing. That's normal. One of China's weaknesses is that they're scared of our military. So the easiest, like the low-hanging fruit here is that we tell them that we're serious about competing. And I don't say, like, this does not mean we're starting a war. What this means is that we force them to invest their resources into things that are like defensive capabilities that don't hurt us.
Right.
So if they think that we have a missile launcher that's really scary for them, they have to put money into designing missile defenses. And that's great. And that means that they're not putting that money into absolutely subverting our economic system.
It's interesting. I mean, but what do you say to the person who then goes, well, if we're creating all these toys that blow things up and you know, diverting things from, you know, from butter and shoes and sugar for, you know, for families, what's to say that, you know, eventually people don't feel the need that, hey, we've got these toys, we got to blow them off and we need to have, you know, fireworks someday.
We've got a whole lot of toys anyway. That's what we're doing. That's what we do. We have so much money going into building all these toys that blow things up. The problem is we're building toys that blow things up that don't scare China. So why don't we realize that they're the competition right now?
Right.
So that if we're going to put these resources into big toys, they should be the kind of toys that scare China.
That's a good point. But, you know, You know, everyone keeps telling me that the cyber war is where China's fighting this battle, and that maybe we should be fighting on that plane. Because, as I understand, and obviously you're the person who would know better than me, that we're way, way behind. And as we develop these new technologies and as we develop these new toys, they're just stealing them. They're just hacking into our computers, and they're stealing them. And if it's not, you know, look, TikTok is, you know, a very small part of this, but, you know, they're stealing from us.
Yeah. And this is like, this is the next really interesting question. So we say cyber war is the most important thing. It's where we have to compete. And so then we put our money into really fancy cutting edge research and development into artificial intelligence, or we put our money into taking AI and sticking it onto something that already exists. China says, oh, cyber war is important. We're going to put our resources into collecting as much information as we can from things like TikTok, as well as from military tools, and also by finding platforms that are robust and defensible that are going to aggregate that information and have good communication mechanisms among them. So we end up with like a lot of shiny things that either don't work that well or China can steal, and China ends up with a massive information advantage and an ability to scale that. And their whole approach is premised on this strategy of military-civil fusion, where commercial companies, so the Huawei's of the world, the satellite systems of the world, the TikToks of the world that are collecting information in the commercial domain are also connecting to the military world. So China's cyber war capabilities benefit from all of the commercial interactions that Chinese champions have in the rest of the world that also gather and shape information. So it's these really different conceptions of cyber war, and ours loses.
Yeah, no, I'm listening to you. Every time I talk to you, you make me more afraid of how far we are behind and how they've got their act together. Because, you know, we like to be, oh, that's just China. They're backwards. The Joe Biden frame of, you know, we don't have to worry about them because they're disjointed and all this stuff. They don't appear to be very disjointed the way you're laying it out. They have a very clear, concise path, a coherent direction forward, and it's all bad for us. And we don't. And this is where I go back to the Coates piece, where Coates talks about having a coherent policy, one that draws in the rest of the world, and basically ripped on his former boss without actually naming his name for not doing any of those things. I mean, we're more isolated than we've ever been, and we're more vulnerable, I think, than we've been. And I don't like to admit that.
No, and we have like such faith. That's why we care about this country, is that we have faith in this country and in our leadership, instead of look around and say we're vulnerable or we don't have our acts together. And the only positive is that you look around and you say that when you get to that low point and when you're at rock bottom, as they say, then you look around as a country and you pull your act together. And you use that as a chance to say, oh, we're wrong on all of these different axes. We need a new approach.
Yeah. So this is this moment where, and this is one of these topics that, you know, I've been talking to conservatives about and Trump supporters, because this is one of those things that I agreed with Trump in 2015 and 2016 about. I kept saying the blind squirrel found a nut. I think he's going to screw it up. And he has. But he was in tune with the reality that China's kicking our behind, and that the average everyday working person in this country is tired of their opportunities being taken away. So do you see that, you know, in a Biden administration, that maybe this is the issue that pulls the country together? And because I've been saying the only way I think we get away from being so polarized is if you have that kind of a war mentality. Maybe I don't want dropping bombs on people, but this idea that, you know, we're somehow going to save the country and not do it in a racist, oh, you know, the China virus. No, we're doing it against a foreign adversary who is literally eating our lunch.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the issue that can do that and can bring about unity. And the other thing is, this is a foundational issue. It has to be the one that comes first, because we don't solve inequality in our country until we solve China. We don't solve climate change until we solve China. We don't solve our industrial base until we solve China. So this is not only the thing that rallies bipartisan support and brings people together and has something that they care about and are willing to work toward, but it's actually like the building block and literally what we have to do if we're going to get out of this mess.
I'm right there with you. And the hope is that, you know, the hope isn't, and this has been my great fear, that because Trump was, you know, China, 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 that anyone anti-Trump is going to, no, China's good. and that we end up polarizing this issue again. And China playing on that just continues to do what they've been doing, and we get much worse off. So I'm glad to hear that you think maybe it's possible. I hope folks will check your recent study out over at horizonadvisory.org. We'll get links out to make sure how you can take a look at that. As the title, U.S. Small Business Bailout Money Flowed to Chinese-Owned Companies, written by the good folks over at Horizon Advisory. Emily, I appreciate the time. It's always great having you on. I appreciate your knowledge, and I tell you, it scares the hell out of me.
Rick, it's always fun chatting. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much. Good stuff. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think? Do you think China's the problem of the next year, 5, 10? And do we have that long? You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top.
Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.